there. Put that wherever.
But now other people in this town, they like it. I don't like it anymore, so you don't like it.
Oh, I have so many pages. Okay, let me get all my things together.
Has the books come in for the Ellery?
I'm not sure. I got one from the shelf. I had like two on the shelf.
So we need to do you. We need to do. Have you decided what you're doing?
No.
What?
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, are you gonna? Do we have copies of it or?
We have some copies in the library.
Is it short enough to
Xerox? No, it's not very short, but it's not very long. 200 pages.
Oh my God.
So, I don't know. So, I just.
Maybe we need to talk to you. Can we do anything shorter? Does he write any short stories? Why don't you pick a nice short story? You can write your page on. It'll be shorter for you. Shorter for us. Getting late.
Can you pass this around?
I'm getting worn out.
And also this one. It's only one page.
All right. Apparently, oh, good.
Okay, I'm.
Wonderful.
I'm having those. One of them is actually the speech Garcia Marquez gave at the. When he got the Nobel Prize, and it's about the solitude of Latin America, so I thought it was very good. I don't want you to read it right now. You can read it later. I thought it was interesting. And the other one is just some very brief things about his own life that I thought they were interesting, and some other things. Well, as you probably know, this is regarded as one of the most important books in Spanish American literature, if not the most important. And Garcia Marquez has written a lot of stuff, but this is by far the most known and the most popular. I thought it was interesting that he was raised by his grandparents and by three aunts. I thought it was interesting because his granddad was a retired colonel who used to talk a lot about the Civil War, and he used to tell him all of these things that later kind of appear in the book. He was a liberal, obviously. And the other thing was that the grandmother and the aunts were obviously very superstitious and all of those things that he puts in the book. He said on one occasion that the main idea of Cien Años de Soledad was to, I don't know, to recapitulate, to bring again his own childhood, which he really loved. Then, what other things? Well, he got the Nobel Prize, which is very important. He got it on the 1982. I wrote here a couple of things that I thought were really interesting, and one is about the boom. I don't know if you know what that is. You know, well, in the 1960s, there appeared a lot of probably 20 or 30 writers that were very good in Latin America. Of all of those, obviously not all of those remained important, but quite a few remain important. He was amongst those. And the idea of the boom, it's not a movement, a literary movement, as many people think. Actually, it is that all of these writers from different nationalities and different lives, they wrote very interesting new things. They experimented a lot with style, with structure, with language. And although they didn't do the same, sometimes they shared this taste for the fantastic that appears in Garcia Marquez, and some others for the magical realism. And it was like a short period, only 15 years, I think. But it is really important because of all these awesome authors that appeared. Really awesome, like Cortázar, Garcia Marquez, donors in Chile, lots, really, a lot of them. And it is called The Womb because a lot of people read them. So it was, in terms of, in economical terms, it was very good for the writers. And then the other thing that I thought was important to consider was the political situation of Latin America, which basically appears in the book and in some of the other books by García Márquez, which is lots of dictators and tyrannies and all of these things that were, I don't know, that the people were struggling with. And also, as I say here, the foreign capital with political power, which also appears in the book, and basically American capital that was in South America.
American corporations.
Yeah, American corporations. And not only the bananas, in Chile we got them as well in the mines and all those places. Then I have this, you probably know about magical realism. Many people say that it's from Latin America. Many others say that it is not, that in some European writers you can see it, and also, well, and lately in American writers. But the idea is, as I put here, is like a coexistence of natural and magical elements with complete harmony. There's nothing that really, the characters live in total harmony with these other things that are not normal for us. And the thing about magical realism is it seems to me that it's kind of disappearing from Latin American literature. And I wrote this here, Macondo versus Macondo. I don't know if you have ever heard about that. This is a Chilean writer, actually, who in the 90s said that magical realism was dead. And he's very strong about it, which I don't like it, actually.
His name isn't Macondo, is it?
No, Macondo, no.
So what's his name?
No, he's Alberto Fouillet. No, Macondo is... Macondo is... What he tries to say is that Latin America is no longer this very folkloric place, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of globalization and Western things. And this Macondo comes from a collection of stories, and of, I mean, 21st century stories. And Macondo comes from McDonald's, obviously. Yeah. So.
And you're from Chile.
I'm from Chile. Yeah.
That's yeah. Harsh,
we have McDonald's. Yeah. But.
Except
McDonald's,
right?
What?
McDonald's. All
McDonald's
out of South America.
No. They're everywhere.
When were you there?
They're everywhere.
Last couple years, they took all McDonald's out of South America.
No, you should go. Believe me.
When was the last time you were there?
On June.
Really?
In June, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I know they took them out of Bolivia. They were in Bolivia for like 6 years and then took them out.
Why did they take them out?
No, believe me, in Chile there are several. And well, what happens is that this guy is really strong about this, and I don't like it because of that, because I think it's kind of disrespectful to García Márquez. And some people consider him very important, like a good writer, Fouillet, the one of Macondo. But this guy was raised here in America. He was born in Chile, raised in the United States, and then he moved to Chile.
Corrupted.
He's corrupted, obviously. But then again, even if you weren't raised in the United States, it's not the same situation as it was in the 60s, obviously. So what he complains a lot is that the American editorials or the publishers ask him to write like García Márquez, ask him to put all these folkloric things, and he has nothing to do with it. So I thought that was interesting.
Wait, I still don't get the... So what's the versus thing between the town and the NC?
Macondo is like magical realism, like from...
That's like a term for it?
100.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But what's the
other one comes from McDonald's, you know? It comes like from the Western civilization trying to say that this is no longer the other Latin America.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what he does.
You get it?
Well, what does ondo mean?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't really mean.
He's saying that Macondo's been corrupted by.
Yeah,
McDonald's.
Yeah. No, not only. I mean, not McDonald's. It's not to put all the blame on McDonald's.
It's one word. Actually. Macondo.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think it's a typo there.
He picked
yeah.
that name to incorporate that idea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To incorporate the idea that we are no longer the. García Márquez Macondo, obviously. Okay, now about 100 years of solitude. There are lots of things to say about it.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
I know that Márquez said that like he was trying to recapture sort of the feelings and sentiments of his childhood because he missed it a lot and he had a lot of nostalgia for it. But this is not that fun of a book, you know? Like, it's not, I mean, what, do you know what it was that he enjoyed from his childhood? I mean, it's, and sad.
I know, it's a sad book, but I think that what I read was that he just, I read somewhere that he had a wonderful childhood until his grandparent died or something like that. So I think he really liked this, being around all these people who weren't his parents, actually, but who had all these stories and all these magical stories, and also his granddad, who had all these other, I don't know, Civil War stories, and I don't know what was the enchantment that made him do it, but...
Well, all the stories, wasn't it, kind of, that he loved all, because his childhood basically was filled with all those stories.
Mm-hmm. And if you, I don't know, in the edition I have from Cien Años de Soledad, the one I have, it's an annotated version. And yes, you can see that a lot of the things that he writes about were actually happening, or they are distorted, obviously, but they have some fundamentals in his life.
I've never been to South America. You know, I know nothing about it. I'm probably just really interested to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, but you know something about at least Bolivia, right? Anybody been to Colombia?
No, I haven't. And I dare say that each country is very different.
Yeah.
Very, very different. So.
But so the combination, maybe it's just the landscape and the sea.
I mean, he's. Like where Macondo is sort of geographically, it's like jungle area, you know, because they're doing bananas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's different from where I grew up in Bolivia, but I know places in Bolivia that are very similar to that, the sort of culture and everything went along with that.
Well, even if it's not geographically similar, there's always this
but it's very
folkloric. I don't know.
But still, it's a sunny, it's very tropical.
Well, yeah.
So far north in South America.
Yeah, and where he was born, I think, close to Cartagena de Indias, which is kind of Caribbean. So it's, yeah. Yeah. Well, talking about magical realism, there are several things that contribute to this tendency. One of the things that I thought was interesting, and you probably noticed it, is all of the religious, development of the story, in terms of like the Old Testament. It is very, very obvious that it begins like the Genesis, like the beginning of the,
Exodus.
Yeah, and then you have the Exodus. Then they.
Hang on a minute. Since I had so much trouble at the beginning, all those inventions brought in by the gypsies, what's that all about?
Well, I'm talking about chronologically speaking, not in terms of the order in which it appears in the book. I mean, chronologically speaking, the birth of Macondo, I'm putting it in that order. The gypsies is something different. And so the... In chronological terms. I should have said that. It is like like the Genesis, like the birth of this new place. It is like very prehistorical. Then there's the original sin in the marriage of Ursula and José Arcadio. Then,
and what's the original sin?
Oh, that they were related, so yeah, you can see it.
No, I'm asking you.
Yeah.
It's very strange to me. I don't have a...
And then they discover this promised land, which turns out to be Macondo. There's the plague where they can't sleep, if you remember,
yeah,
where they begin forgetting about things. There's afterwards the I don't know, deluge, you say, or the flood? The flood?
Deluge?
Okay. Very resembling the Bible story. And obviously at the end there's an apocalyptic ending with the end of the Buen Días and of Macondo. So in magical realism terms, it's like there's this whole thing of the myth they put together, the myth of the creation. And Macondo appears like a microcosm. And many people think that it actually reflects a lot of the history of Latin America, being like always underdeveloped, away from the Western civilization. You must think about this book like being written in the 60s, not now. South America and Latin America is very, 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 very different from that time. So, other things that are like in the same trend of the magical realism are the relativity of the worldviews. I thought it was very interesting how these people get amazed by the false teeth and the, I don't know, ice or the locomotive. They get totally amazed, and they don't care about the flying, what do you call them? The flying carpets, I don't know.
The flying carpets.
Or about the Remedios Ascension or all of those things. They totally look at them like the most natural things.
Why is that?
Well, that's magical realism. That's, I don't know, it's another way of dealing with the fantastic, I guess. It's just part of their lives. Some critics said that it was the way, actually, it is not like it happens like that, but that these people from these very folkloric places,
like
from rural...
Remedios Ascension is something that happens within, like, their world.
But yeah, that's the way they perceive it.
From somewhere else, man-made things, you know, isn't like this sort of natural ascension. You know?
So it's very much similar to this Columbus wonder.
Well, it's
wonder at the ice and you wonder at
the gypsy invasion. It's totally backwards.
But, you know, the concept of the supernatural or flying carpet.
Right. Well, it's always been that way, or, you know, it's a natural thing, and these people are very natural kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're amazed by anything man-made, technology.
Anything new, yeah.
Especially José Arcadio, who blows
them away. I still have to go back to like his comments about how it represents his childhood, because I think you can imagine a child listening to his grandmother's stories, maybe. And
yeah, you're right.
Hearing these magical stories, these superstitions and things like that, and those are much easier to accept, but as he gets older, you know, the things from the outside world is what really wonders about. And also the thing that sort of puts an end to his childhood, puts an end to everything else. Because there's there's a character in there that I think is sort of him, right? There's a character that's actually...
Who?
His last name is...
Marcus.
Yeah.
There is this... Yeah, Marcus was one of the generals, or not? Yeah.
Oh, no, but there's a... Okay.
No, there is a... There is
one
a...
The one
that goes to Paris.
Right.
He's called Gabriel, I think.
Right, his
name
is Gabriel,
yeah.
And he has an uncle, or his father is a colonel, or something
I think,
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he, I mean, he, you know, he's in the town and everything, but he grows out of it and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's that guy at the end, the wise guy.
He's, a, he's
almost at the end,
with
yeah.
The last
of with the last of the Wendy's, yeah. He's the one that goes to Paris and leaves his girlfriend, I think, in charge of the drugstore, pharmacy, yeah, something like that. No, Gaston. Gaston was Fernanda's husband. Yeah. Did you get to read all of it?
No, I meant right here.
So oh, you still have a long way.
Yeah, but I read a synopsis of it.
Oh, okay.
So good.
The child.
Me.
The bastard.
Yeah.
Right?
Huh?
I love
he,
that.
Yeah,
he go
before.
To the bookstore.
I read it last year.
And there was like.
I think I'm getting into it by the middle.
Keep on trying. Don't give up.
Over halfway.
The owner.
Yeah.
Really, like, read books and everything.
Right.
And one of
when you finish it, you take it all
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah,
just,
yeah.
Like,
okay, yeah.
Such a good
but it wasn't until I read it in Spanish that I was saying.
Is that in Spanish?
No, but I read the
so
first five pages and realized how pitiful
yeah,
the English translation is.
It's
unreadable.
Dead or
oh. And I mark all through it. I'm marking things that make no sense. I mean, the English.
Well, it's very.
But the Spanish is very alive and
you don't love
sound.
It in English though?
I didn't mind it in English.
Oh, I did.
Goodness, like
doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a bad translation. I thought it was pretty good.
I wonder.
How about this? His first line, his father took him to discover ice.
And what is it in Spanish?
No, I can't get past that line. It's, it's like, in the Spanish, it's learn about ice. You don't discover it. This is like Columbus discovering America. Right?
Yeah.
He found it, others were already there, right? So he didn't discover the ice. So it's just a complete mistranslation.
Yeah, it's childlike. That's it gives you this real adventurous childlike.
I'm telling you, I don't didn't bring the Spanish, but the Spanish word does not mean discover.
I don't
let me
that.
See.
No,
learn
I
about.
Doubt.
And the translator should have said learn about ice. Nice. A little kid goes to learn about what his father already knew. His father was taking him to show it.
I don't doubt that it's a mistranslation. But I don't think it's a bad mistranslation.
To be acquainted.
Yeah.
To be acquainted.
Yeah.
To meet the ice. I don't know.
Meet
the ice.
Ice.
No, to be acquainted with ice, to learn about
yeah.
ice.
Yeah, I must say that when that I thought that discovery, I thought it wasn't
and
a good word.
What's supposed to be the key sentence here,
the
first page, things have a life of their own. This is in reference to the magnets. That's what it
where
says
that?
Here. Things have a life of their own. And it's not what the English has, which is... I mean, in Spanish it says
where
things
it?
Have their own life, and there's just a big difference if you're reading, if you're trying to understand this thing.
Yeah.
And there's no bowels of the earth in the Spanish. I mean, it's just
there's no what?
Bowels of the earth in it. There's an English gold from
Spanish
gold from the bowels of the earth. Okay. And here's another one. Okay. Jose Arcadio Buendía, whose unbridled imagination always went beyond the genius of nature. And even beyond miracles and magic. How do you go beyond miracles and magic? You can't do it, okay? And then Spanish is sort of al de la, on the other side of, okay? Which is, suggests there's another world there, okay? It may be subtle, but it makes it much better in Spanish than in this English.
Well, I mean, you could probably say that for any text that gets translated.
No, because he's using, sometimes he's using the false friend, the English word that sounds like the Spanish,
mm-hmm.
like in that sentence about the genius of nature.
Yeah.
Okay. He went beyond the genius of nature. The Spanish means natural ingenuity. Okay, what a human being can possess. The genius of nature sounds like something in Spencer's Fairy Queen. Okay. I mean, it's very natural and human in the Spanish, and it gets really stiff and clunky in the English. It's really
well, if you think about it, it's like with any translation that the translator is doing his own interpretation of the book. So you will never get... want us.
But the thing
is, right, the boss, the only one that's translated, is this guy, is there only one?
I think it's the only one.
Like the
it's
only
the only one. And actually, Garcia Marquez likes it a lot. He likes him a lot.
English. I'm sorry.
No,
you know?
I don't think so.
It's full of misprints, too. And there are sentences that make absolutely no sense. Okay. I mean, I'm marking through here.
We should check them in Spanish, maybe.
I don't
make much sense. Yeah.
Is that it's supposed to be represented in a very natural way.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so when you say genius of nature,
that's
making the language itself magical, which is not.
And the thing you gave me, the footnote, you know, said, this is the most important sentence in the book. Well, I say, get it right. That's the most important sentence in the book. But, guys, you know, for the... Some of you are smarter than I am.
Well,
no, that's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm a hard audience. I did get the, you know, my wife has trouble with bouncing off of this for years, too. I don't know, but I know plenty of people like it, so I know I'm weird.
Well, I hadn't looked at the primary, you know, I don't know how to read Spanish, so. I came to it as if this was the text.
Well,
discover ice doesn't bother you. There's people who can get through the first.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was funny the discover ice.
Well, yeah, I thought it was almost meant to be kind of.
I find it.
Not funny in the way that something funny, but I thought it was weird. Discover ice.
Just saying, it sets you up for all of the impossible things that happen in this book. That's like the whole MO.
I got going, I get used to this.
Well, you can reread it in Spanish later, then.
Yeah.
You see? Well, okay. Well, the other thing that is really important in the book, and people who work with magical realism work a lot of it with it, is with time. They play with time a lot. And it's like the structure of time. Well, first of all, it's the narrator that seems to have like this, I don't know, management of time. Even when the book starts, you get all these anticipations, like this double anticipations. And he obviously knows all of the future, present and past, and is able to do these arrangements. That is something very typical from the magical realism. And obviously not only with Garcia Marquez, but with other readers. And by the way, I forgot to mention that magical realism appears before this book, like in the 20s, I would say. It appears with, I forgot about him, and he's so important, that's why I'm mentioning him now. This Miguel Ángel Asturias, I don't know if you have ever...
He's the one that's mentioned in here, right?
Miguel Ángel Asturias?
Did he write Los de Abajo? Or no,
no. Yeah. Arzuela. Yeah, Arzuela.
What's the guy's name? Miguel?
Something? Yeah, something like that. Miguel Ángel Asturias. He was Asturias.
Guatemala.
A. Asturias. Yes, he was from Guatemala. Sure, I should can. El Señor Presidente. Did you read that? It's awesome.
Yeah, that was not magical realism.
But there are some things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there are some things. This is... Asturias. Yeah, this he was from Guatemala. He also got the Nobel Prize in 1967, and well, not so much with El Señor Presidente, but with Men of Maize. He starts with he and some other some guy from Cuba also. And as I was reading it, I this was the second time I read it, and I remembered a lot of Asturias, because although not so much in this one, Asturias is extremely, you would say, crude in his scene. Do you remember? He's really crude, and there are sometimes
crude,
like, would you say crude, or you?
I don't know. I haven't read him.
Do you say?
You mean like, as in
almost cruel, or almost.
Like graphic.
Yeah, graphic. I don't know. You
juvenile?
Don't.
You mean he writes about sex? Is that what you're saying?
No. No. But I don't know how you say that.
It's more realistic. That's it.
Yeah.
It's very like
like gruesome. I don't know.
Cover up the language. It's just very plain.
Yeah.
It tells exactly what he's
saying,
kind of thing.
Okay.
And I think that there are some things that really resemble part of it. And the other thing is that Asturias also has like this political theme of the dictators and things, and which García Márquez develops later in another novel. So that's with magical realism. So it's not something from actually from the 50s. It's earlier, and some people even think that. Some people even put Borges there, but I don't. I just wouldn't put him in the magical realism. I don't. Okay, now about time, it's this thing, and it's also, time is circular, obviously. It repeats a lot. The names repeat a lot, and there's this constant repetition, obviously. And not only we get the repetition of names, but the own characters resemble the previous characters. And so all the José Arcadios resemble the first José Arcadio, and all the Aurelianos kind of repeat the same things by the original Aureliano. And the other interesting thing about time is that it begins like the way Macondo develops as a city is like colonial, from the colonial time in Latin America. And it's totally undeveloped, kept away from Europe, from what's going on in Europe. They try to reach these other, if you remember well, they try to reach these other towns that are nearby, but they are not able. It's almost like the Spanish conquest when they are beginning to, I don't know, to just, they're beginning to take power over the Indians and everything. It's like, very, it resembles a lot. And then we have also this woman, Fernanda, at the end of the book, who's kept in her own ways, like in the Spanish 16th century. She's totally out of place. Macondo has already developed. It's a little bit more like a, I don't know, it has more modern items and things, and she's always in her own ways, kept in her own ways. And you might think of her as the way like Latin America was until, I would say, the 70s or even the 80s. It was very much like with a problem of development. The new development that comes in Latin America, it probably comes around the late 80s or 90s. So,
and what's the problem with
this? And she, in her own way, in her own ways, is like traditional. And she resembles, in some way, the traditional Latin America that is not able to develop because of being kept in this very, I don't know, old-fashioned ways and not being able to adapt to the new situations. You can.
She's like Catholic. Very, like,
yeah.
Very religious.
Very religious.
Are we talking about Ursula?
No, Fernanda.
Fernanda.
But doesn't she feel like Macondo, like that town is the one that like is just old-fashioned and needs to
Fernanda?
Get with it more? Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I know she's traditional, like, from where she comes, with her, you know, customs from where she comes,
yeah.
But like, she seems the most, like, the furthest developed as far as...
Well,
like
she thinks they're country people.
Yeah,
she thinks
yeah.
they're country people, and she keeps her house neat and
right.
ordered and has the musical instruments and stuff like that. But then she opposes the train. She doesn't like the theater when they put the theater at, stuff like that.
Yeah, she's very traditional. So, well, you can see the whole Macondo as Latin America having all these problems with the Western culture and being under the power of, I don't know, North America and all of these things.
You say that the book's in three phases, the sort of the settlement and just the genesis part. And
the beginning and then the
war. Somehow that liberal conservative war, whatever it was supposed to represent, and then the capitalist development. So if you were going to write this today, you'd have to add one more section. about super modern
civilization. I don't know if super modern. Yeah.
I mean, mega urban, or, you know, megalopolises or something.
You mean like in with
this? Well, you said this really takes you up to the 60s, okay? And mm-hmm. now you're describing stuff in the 80s.
I'm describing stuff that obviously is not in the book.
Right.
That
so it would seem like everybody would move out of the condo and go to like Mexico City.
Yeah.
Oh. Or my condo would have 3 million people.
Right.
Yeah. Is that... It's very difficult. I think it's a difficult book to read for me. And I guess it's even more difficult for you to read because you really don't... As foreigners from this other place, from the United States, you might very well think that this is the way Latin America is. And you might, and I bet many people do.
No, but I think that the difficulty is actually not, really, for me, knowing that it's about a kind of early, like, pre-60s Latin America that I have no experience of what it's like to be born somewhere that has the radio and clearly is in contact with the rest of the world but not getting any of the benefits. Right, you know, people with all the houses with dirt floors or stuff like that. And, you know, just... The communications are difficult, transportation, nothing working, you feel isolated.
Well, and this is an extreme. It's not like, it's not like everything
well,
was like
to
that.
Well, trying to recreate the sensibilities of somebody growing up in that, where discovering ice would be so exciting and you know, having these Italian and Gypsy merchants.
If you think about it, the time in this book is, it's not like it is, it's like in the 19th century. Yeah. I wouldn't put it in the 20th century. I wouldn't
do it.
Like,
I mean, one was
it's earlier.
Like that. I mean, it's got
yeah,
like
it's in the 19th.
1820,
1920. Yeah, yeah. It's that is the chronological time of when it happened. The other thing about... eventually they get the modernization, they get all these things. But it's not like the culture brought the development, it's just that it was almost by chance.
Right.
They, the Americans discover the bananas, they go and put all this, I don't know, enterprise there with the fruit company and everything. They start getting a lot of money. And then we have this other, José Arcadio, that has all of these cows and all of that. I don't know if you remember. And that brings a lot of money also to the city. But it's not like they are developing and being more modern. It's just by chance that they get all of these things. And I guess that is why they also lose everything so easily, because they really haven't worked for it. It's just like... It just came.
That's the way it is in a lot of places in South America.
Yeah.
Where, like, I mean, to have, like, a train and a theater in whatever, even 1950, like, that was huge, and that was because of these foreign investors. But the foreign investors a lot of times pulled out, and then everything
died. Everything,
right.
Yeah.
Have Macondo becoming a city of 3 million people, it would go back. It would revert 100 years because there's no more money there.
Yeah.
What struck me is the macho-ness. I don't know if this is weird. You know, there's the backward civilization I know is Ireland, right? But the people wouldn't be like these Buendia guys, so macho with their big guns and knives and chewing on people and stuff. They'd be these Irishmen with their little ironies and their walking down the road kind of thing, and you know. I sucked from the job today, it's okay, I'll go home and have a drink, you know. and a whole different attitude. This is, the stuff of this novel, though, is action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It struck me as, you know, I asked the question, what do the characters do anything? Well, they're constantly doing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, this
page.
Is... They're making decisions, they're weighing it, and they go ahead and do it. And of course, everything comes out badly, right? So, so they're in a world where everything is, all the best intentions are thwarted.
Mm-hmm.
And the effect of reading the book is the people just dying so quickly. You know, I'm just dying to. I thought Jose Arcadio was going to go through the whole book, you know.
Right.
You know, if you're going to do Macho, he was doing it, right? You know, the shotgun everywhere he went. And then he's shot by his wife.
They don't tell. They don't say. She says that she did.
What's that supposed to mean?
Yeah.
Why don't they? You know, are we supposed to assume Rebecca shot him? Or?
That, about Jose Arcadio, that's like the one mystery in the book.
Oh.
Yeah, it is.
A few mysteries.
Well, but that is like the biggest,
that
I think.
What strikes me is the gold that's buried under the floor that never gets claimed.
It never gets.
Is that right?
Yeah, remember those come into the house.
Well, right. But it is not claimed.
The mystery is who were those people?
They just never made it back.
Do they get more religion? He said that Ferdinando was Catholic. Because as far as I've gotten, this is the most pagan thing I've ever read. It's like reading Petronius's Satyricon in classics people, which is life in 3rd century Rome, which was became Fellini's Satyricon. But, I mean, it's just all money.
Yeah, no, you don't get much.
Sex, and that's all I see. They didn't have a hammock.
No, they don't get much. Even I think that, who is the one? It's Amaranta, I think, that says that she doesn't want to confess when she's about to die. Yeah, she knows that she's going to die. And so the father from the church gets there and she goes like, no, I don't need you. I don't. No, there's... They have their own ways.
How do you know whether it's comic or depressing?
I think that he's like, there's a contrast. I think you can make a contrast between like Melquiades and like the conservative religion, Catholic religion, where Melquiades is sort of giving you some sort of science mixed with the supernatural, and there's always that sort of polarity between him and like the people, you know, that either the father or the one Buendia who goes off and he's supposed to become a pope, and he does, right? He becomes a pope in sort of his own house with his kids and all that kind of stuff. But there's like that play between them through the whole thing. And I mean, I would say that Marquez is very anti-Catholic Church and very
probably.
Right? He wants to get rid of that kind of stuff. And so there's that.
Because that's the traditional thing that doesn't let, it's like Fernanda, no?
Right.
It doesn't let Latin America grow or whatever.
But yeah,
and it's totally truthful.
But this, you know, I mean, in Mexico, for example, the anti-clericalism was much more vicious than this. And you can read about it in the Graham Greene novels, I forget.
Power and Glory.
Power and the Glory, about, you know, tracking down priests with the dogs and stuff
awesome.
Like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this, you know, he seems to be always playing. That's what I find difficult, at least in the English. He seems to be playing with stuff that's enormously serious.
Mm-hmm.
This random violence and this macho guys. Everybody's defined by their, you know. And even the author seems to revel in the fact that a good Spanish man is a macho womo type guy. And there's really, there's always strong men and weak men, you know. I had another manifestation of that. It just slipped my mind. I'll get back to it. It's just a limited range of stuff goes on. Okay? That people, the kids, you have kids that go bad, that, you know, very amorphous family situations. And, you know, I don't mind. And it works as a sort of thing about, you know, random violence is just, you're in a situation where you can't get anything done because you don't know who's going to come around the corner with some crazy idea. And that seems very realistic.
Though it all seems as a result.
And it excuses the magic, excuse me.
Oh, no. It all seems like the result of this original sin that you're talking about, the marriage. Kind of like it doomed the next 100 years.
Yeah.
That everything that came out of this marriage was doomed. And I think, you know, anybody who comes into contact with these people, I forget names as if it were
any kind of easy task to remember names in this book. The girl
Rebecca,
who eats the dirt.
Yeah. Rebecca.
Right.
Rebecca.
She's adopted, kind of. You know, sort of taken. And she's fine until she comes into contact with this family. And then from then on, she's totally doomed. And the thing that always gets me about this book is everybody's got these demons, and I definitely don't mean real demons, like you know, demons, but but you know, the compulsion to eat the dirt of the woman who locks herself in that house for the rest of her life, and just all of these, or the woman where all these guys try and seduce her and they all die, like four or five guys in a row.
That's Amaranta.
This acceptance of this casual acceptance of prostitution that is like, I'm sure it's real, okay. But it's, you know, you expect you don't get any kind of moral comment on it. All the moral attitude is going on the war, and the liberal versus Catholic, the liberal conservative thing. That seems to be where Marquez's heart is.
Mm-hmm.
But the women are just, you know, and I've read a couple articles on this. Well, everybody praises Ursula for being the Earth Mother,
right?
The strong thing, but all the rest of the women are just trash and toys. And the background women. It's insane. There's prostitutes everywhere. It's a red light district, and it's perfectly expected that the men will go running down there at the drop of a hat, and every man should have at least, you know, plenty of experience before he gets dumped by the real woman.
That's a cultural thing. Yeah, that's a cultural thing. It doesn't call me so much attention.
But he doesn't seem to be getting beyond that cultural thing. It's just, I don't know.
He's not,
I mean,
really
perfectly fun to read. It's actually the good part, but it's the part that's distressing.
I think that, what you're saying about the political thing, I think you can say that about almost any Latin American writer, is that the politics is always one of their central themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can't get away from it.
Yeah. I mean, this is pretty light.
The situation restricts restricts the imagination of the writer. You can't get out of the trap. I mean, Nabokov talked about writing a novel in 1942 without World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the freedom of the novelist, and he says, the hell of the world, I'm writing my novel, you know, why should I have to put in this war? Okay, it's bad enough, we're fighting it. Why do I have to think about it when I'm trying to write a novel? And you sort of want Marquez to do that, but I have a feeling that's what he's trying to do with this magical realism.
You think trying to get rid of that?
From underneath this macho stuff and out from underneath the chaos.
I don't know.
Because I can't imagine anything else that he would want to do. But
because I think he has a lot of social issues, so I wouldn't think that.
Embracing them and bringing them in.
Struggle is mirrored in the book, though, isn't it? That these people are trapped in this land where they can't get out. And they start to kind of do well, and politics come in and force them back into their place. And
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So the escape must be, again, which is more obvious in the Spanish, is in the joy of the language, I think, in the storytelling, which is to me, doesn't translate into English. I have one other translation. You want one? And mine is page 127. It's, it's Amaranta. I don't know what you've got. He knew... Pietro, he knew all about the details of the house, Pietro Crespi's suicide, Arcadio's arbitrary acts and execution. I don't know how else to tell you where it is.
No, that's fine.
But here's the phrase, the dauntlessness of Jose Arcadio Buendia. I don't know what the Spanish is, I didn't look it up, but it ain't dauntless.
what's dauntless? I don't
know. I have no idea what it is.
He can't be like a phrase.
Yeah.
Oh.
He knew that Amaranta had consecrated her virginal widowhood to the rearing of Aureliano Jose. Now, what the hell is virginal widowhood? Okay. The fact is, she never married anybody.
No.
That's the whole point of her story, so she can't be in a widowhood. So it's got to be a mistranslation for something.
Wait, of who? What woman is
that? Amaranta. But I think they say something about viudez. Now that you say that, I think they...
So if you're reading it and trying to figure out, go, wow, when did she get married and the husband died? Because there's plenty of husbands dying. So you kind of go flipping back, and then it doesn't happen.
But
so,
I'm almost sure that he uses something like widowhood.
But it may, in Spanish, be the correct term. But in English, it's not.
Okay.
In English, it means she had a husband and he died.
Oh.
In Spanish, it might mean she lived alone as a spinster. Or something like that, or a married woman.
A lot of this of the language is so metaphorical, so that's the problem with the translation, that you cannot get the
good. That's a
metaphorical
good,
language.
Very good.
You cannot.
It's hard to translate stuff.
Wait, what was the sentence?
I was wondering.
Without upsetting.
He knew that Amaranta had consecrated her virginal widowhood to the rearing of Aureliano Jose, and that the latter was beginning to show signs of quite good judgment, and that he had learned to read and write at the same time he learned to speak. It's in chapter...
I will never find it. It doesn't have a number, so you will...
The chapter that starts, the war was over in May.
The war was over in May.
Oh, here's a phrase.
And then how many pages in from the beginning of that chapter?
Four. It's the bottom of the fourth page. As the paragraph starts, there were superior orders that prohibited visits to prisoners.
Okay. And then where in that paragraph?
Halfway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right here.
The virginal widowhood, the dauntlessness. Mm-hmm. Anyway. And by the way, I'm not pronouns in this season. All the time. Anyway, but I was getting into it by that time, so it was really bothering me.
What word do they use to call the infections that he had in his under
outer? Sores. They just say sores.
Just sores. Yeah. That was one of the words that I was wondering. What do they use? Because in Spanish they use golondrino, which I had no idea what it was. So I went to the good dictionary. And golondrina is a sparrow, is a bird. But then golondrino, they use it as somebody who moves a lot, who goes from one place to the other, which is what Aureliano actually did. They also use it to talk about people who desert the army, which he finally also did. So I was really wondering, there's a lot of metaphorical language that the translator is unable
to. So it's a maki, it's a stain, it's a spot, it's a moral spot somehow, and there's something that I don't know. So, and he would, you know, and then he's got his arms out like he's being crucified or something.
Yeah. It's not on the spot, it means so many other things. I mean, you can totally read it as that. Did anybody find it? Did you find it?
I mean, there's plenty of sentences that really just make no sense if you actually read it. But,
I would hate to be a translator.
Well, people seem to, everybody seems to like it, so.
Well, it's better not having it.
What else? Well, obviously the title, Cien Años de Soledad, 100 years of solitude. I think it's really, really important because it brings all this theme about time from the beginning. You know how important time is. And then the theme about solitude, that if you think about it, as you were talking about the demons of each of the characters, it's a family, they're all together, they live together, but every single one of them is really in its own solitude.
Right, yeah.
And it's, yeah.
Just a question about time in general. When I read it, I remembered Isabel Allende's The House of the Spirits, mm-hmm. and that Clara at some point says, you should not give the daughter the mother's name, mm-hmm. because that confuses the spirits. Mm-hmm. I think she's Clara, and the daughter is Blanca, and then it's Alba. So it's all similar, but not the same name, actually, is that commonly held belief, so that they're kind of doomed because they repeat the names, or...
It could be.
That circle? I just wondered about that.
Yeah, it could be. Or it could be that Allende takes that from the book, this thing of being doomed because of the name. I mean, she takes it up from here, I think, that makes sense because it's a later book. So Allende is new. I mean, she's from the 80s, I think, The House of the Spirits. So it's this whole circle of people repeating themselves, repeating the names, and having the demons, as Ed says, and being very lonely while being together. And so, as they are doomed because of this whole family issue and the incest and everything, I think that's...
Is this an attack? I couldn't decide if it was pro-Spanish or anti-Spanish. I mean, Spanish in the sense of Latin American Spanish, because, I mean, from the one point of view, as soon as he mentioned Drake as sort of the evil guy who'd done something horrible to Francis Drake on the coast,
yeah.
You go, well, okay, that, you know, anti-English thing, that, you know, that just fits. But then I thought, well, hey, these guys are pretty Spanish-looking. They don't look like Native Indians to me, okay? So when are the Indians going to come in there, and who's the real subaltern figure here? Who's really oppressed in this thing?
Well, okay. I think it's pretty much like it
the
was
Indians,
in the States.
The Indians died right away.
Yeah, there were only two Indians, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that it's pretty much as it was here. When you see Latin America history, or I think of Chile, you had lots of people that were sons of Spaniards, but they hated Spain.
Okay, so the usual colonial thing.
It's a colonial.
As soon as you get used to your country, then
you want to get rid of the others.
Then the new Spanish come over.
Yeah, because they are also abusing of your country, so... So.
Yeah, no, it's like the...
I don't know.
I found that thing.
What thing?
The sentence.
Right, hello.
Let's view this.
Oh,
view this? View this, you see? That's being a widow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Widowhood, then.
I'm saying that's a false friend, then. You take the English expression widowhood as if it means the same in Spanish, and it can't possibly mean the same, because the English means widow.
But metaphorically, it cannot mean? It couldn't? I'm just wondering.
You've got to be pretty careful there, because she's not a widow.
I know.
Okay. And then you know... You can't call it, in English, you can't call it widow. You have to say something else. And we just don't use it that way.
But in Spanish, can it be used loosely like that?
Yeah, it might, because that's the way you use it.
I mean, there's but not really any other way to translate it.
No,
right?
No, I don't think so. Well, it's just poetry. Put it like that, poetry. That's the way I think it.
Well, translating is such a doomed activity. You're going to blow.
So what is the phrase? This is the word?
Viudas de Virgen. Viudas de Virgen.
Is the same word used for men or only women?
Yeah, it's the same one.
Is it a man?
Viudas?
A man can do
yeah, I think in Italian it's...
Viudas? Yeah, sure.
A man too.
Yeah.
But in English, see, it's only a woman. You'd have to be a widower. So the Spanish is a different word,
right?
And the translator is not catching that. It's just lazily bringing over the word, you know, with something similar, okay?
I don't know.
For the sensitive reader.
Okay, could be, yeah.
We're talking, we're used to, you know, reading. This is not just transparency, right? So looking at this.
I think it's probably also in Italian, the Levanta is more loosely used as... opposed to being a widow, I guess.
Could it be just the unmarried state?
Yeah, well, unmarried state is different. It's like the Latin, I guess, for a woman.
Is what?
You zitella. Spinster is zitella. But I guess it could be metaphorically a non-married. I mean, maybe you can use more loosely than.
I mean, in Spanish, you use it if somebody's a widow, a widower, or a what?
Right,
you use it in that sense. But I think it's just some poetic language or something like that.
Sure, and the second time, sorry. I'm trying to figure out if she ever got married.
No, she didn't. She didn't.
Trying to keep track of characters.
She definitely didn't get married.
No, she never got married.
You can just go through this and not, you know, think of it.
She never got married. I don't know, I think four men died because of her, but she never got married.
No.
She was very stubborn. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
She was, and the name means bitter, right? Doesn't it? Amaranta.
Yeah, somehow. I mean, Amargo, amargo is bitter.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. Sorry, maybe
but amaranta,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, that seems
could be. Could it just as closely be like something related just to love, though? Amar,
yes, always. You can see it from different.
Bitter in love. All right.
Bitter in love. Yeah, yeah, you're right about amar. Yeah.
Who wrote Song of Hiawatha?
Longfellow.
Did he write something else where there was some...
Evangeline.
No, yeah, but there. I remember reading that Marcus liked this story by, I think it was the same guy, he wrote something about some settlement, some community.
It's called Evangeline. It was a French settlement up in New Brunswick, Canada.
Okay.
By the order of the King of England, everybody had to leave when they went into English hands, and they shipped them all down to New Orleans. And everybody was scattered, and Evangeline spent some time tracking down the man she was engaged to who got separated from her. And, it's actually quite a good poem. This is the forest primeval, the wandering pines, and the hemlocks. It's done in dactylic hexameters. Okay. Anyway. Now, what was the connection?
Well, do you remember the name of the settlement? Does it start with a T?
A T?
T and something with a CK at the end or something like that. I don't know, but he was. I read that he was thinking he wanted to use that name instead of Macondo, but then he figured Macondo would be better.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take a little break. I'll go over this essay and then we'll see what happens. All right. Or do you want to just go right into it?
Break.
How should I stop this?
Thank you very much.
Stop.